The following presentation is brought to you by the Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to novelist Spencer Quinn, author of the Chet and Bernie mystery series, including Dog on It, Thereby Hangs a Tale, and the latest, Paw and Order. Stick around. No dogs will be harmed or interrogated in the course of this conversation. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of dog lovers who already think they know what their dog is thinking when, in fact, only Spencer Quinn really knows, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Let's start this conversation with an apology. The first time Spencer Quinn was a guest on Mr. Media to talk about the first two Chet and Bernie mystery novels, I thought it would be clever to proceed as if I were interviewing Chet, who is the voice of the books. Chet, incidentally, is a dog. I realized after a few minutes of conversation that that didn't go over very well with Mr. Quinn. And it's taken me a couple of years to get up the nerve to invite him back. He had every right to tell me, well, you know what he could have told me. But he didn't. Of course, the original was an audio-only podcast where maybe I thought I saw it, maybe I thought I heard a dog. And this is video where I can clearly see that my guest is a human being. The Chet and Bernie Mysteries are an engaging series of crime novels, typically set out west, featuring former cop and now private detective Bernie Little and his dog, Chet. Every story is told in Chet's voice, which means the narrative is sometimes interrupted by a cat, a smell, the need to relieve the author's kidneys. I'm sure you get the idea. Put another way, where Sherlock Holmes has his Watson, often to put the reader off track, Bernie has his Chet. Their latest adventure takes the pair across the country to Washington, D.C., ostensibly to reunite with Bernie's girlfriend, Susie, now reporter at the Washington Post. But it doesn't take long for a dead body to appear, and the little detective agency is on the scent. And so, with profound apologies for my previous approach, Spencer Quinn, welcome back to Mr. Media.
Thanks so much, Mr. Media. Apology not necessary and accepted at the same time. Here's the thing. Chet is not a talking dog. That's the key to the whole concept. He's a narrating dog, but he's as purely canine as I could make him. He's not a human wrapped up in a dog suit. He's not ironic. He's not knowing. He knows nothing that a dog shouldn't know. He doesn't know about Mozart. None of that. He's as purely canine as I could make him. That's the idea. He doesn't talk. He barks.
Have you seen the movie Guardians of the Galaxy?
No, I have not.
You should see it. There's a character called Drax the Destroyer who is very much the way you just described Chet. He's very powerful. He's very smart. But there's no he has no internal narrator of his own. He just is what he sees and what he thinks and what he speaks. There's no metaphor. There's no buried context.
Well, Chet is extremely literal minded. He, for example, as would often happen in crime fiction, sometimes the detective suspects that they're on a wild goose chase, and every time Bernie, who's the detective, says this looks like a wild goose chase, Chet thinks, okay, I'm ready. Bring on the geese because it sounds real like a lot of fun.
Right, like in this book, Paw and Order, he keeps hearing about donkeys and elephants, and he's ready for that scent because he knows what that is, and he never seems to smell those smells.
Right, Right. See, exactly. He's in D.C., the land of donkeys and elephants. Susie mentions it several times that the whole thing is about that fight between the two of them. And he knows both of them. He smelled them both and he doesn't pick up a whiff of either. So there are a lot of puzzlements to check.
Right. And he's being a detective and yet he's easily distracted. Or, you know, with my daughter, I would always say, oh, look, a butterfly. And it's like, you know.
No, that's exactly right. Well, you see, to marry that. Crime fiction is a lot like solving a real crime. You line up a bunch of clues, sift through them, and put them in a logical sequence and conclude something. Well, Chet can't do that. And even if he could, just as you were pointing out, when an important clue is about to be revealed, he might, I don't know, sniff a Cheeto under a couch, and he's gone. So he actually becomes an unreliable narrator. And to marry the unreliable narrator to this traditional mystery form, which you nailed absolutely, it's the Holmes and Watson, where the sidekick tells the story in the first person. It goes back to the very beginning. To marry those two together, suddenly something new is happening on the page, which and it makes it very fresh for the writer, too.
I would think it'd be very similar if Homer Simpson was the narrator.
I don't know. No, you see, because Homer. Okay, I love Simpsons. I love Homer Simpson, but the whole thing is over the top to start with. Like the beginning point of that is over the top. I keep it all under the top. I want this somehow still to seem like a real story, a real mystery.
And so along that lines, and this is funny because this is actually the first thing I wanted to really ask you about is, what arbitrary rules have you put into place for writing these books that you know you, that makes it work with the voice of the dog? I mean, what you know, for example, you know, what can the dog do and what can the dog not do? What can the dog tell us about? What can the dog not tell us about?
Okay, the dog can only tell us about things that the dog would perceive from the situations he's in. In terms of the past and memories, it's all very disrupted and fragmented, what he does with the past. Certain things are incredibly strong. Certain things having to do with sense of smell and sense of hearing, where he's way ahead of Bernie. And so sometimes the reader is also way ahead of Bernie. Like Chet, you know, Bernie, for example, his nose isn't that small. But you know, what's it for? Chet doesn't, it's useless as an organ. So there are some things where he's way ahead and some where we know that he just hasn't really got the human type brain power to add up things together and he's going to be in danger and he's moving into danger just because he doesn't know. At other times, it's Bernie moving into danger because he doesn't know what Chet already knows. But there's nothing, sorry to interrupt, but there's nothing, he can't tell us anything that a dog wouldn't be able to know. That's the rule. So I don't find it an arbitrary injunction that I place upon myself. And in fact, I don't even think about it because I've imagined myself inside that character and that happened without any work on my part. And the rest just flows organically. That's the truth of the matter.
And Chet has this remarkable memory, however. He remembers certain things about certain earlier cases, which is very convenient to someone who has a back catalog.
Well, yes, and some of, for example, Peanut the Elephant, and I think that comes up in Paw and Order. There is a case in To Fetch a Thief, book three in the series, where the case concerned a missing elephant. Well, I wanted something very big to be missing. And so as soon as Chet hears from Susie in Paw and Order, you know, that about elephants and donkeys. I mean, he's ready to go because he has experience with an elephant, right? He knows that's in his dossier.
Right. Now that's awesome. And so there are no rules specifically, except, that, I mean, there are rules. It's whatever a dog could see and hear is fair game.
And smell.
Yes, and smell, yeah.
Exactly. And, well, of course, the sight part is third. That's not the go-to sense of any dog. One of the reasons that dogs, sometimes when they get old and blind, actually can get around very well compared to a human in a similar situation, who is, right away, you say, handicapped. You don't say that of a dog who's lost his sight necessarily.
And so will Bernie ever tell the story of his own cases?
No. Bernie, this at least not as long as I'm in control of the series. He won't. This is all the seven novels plus the three E short stories that are only, which sort of round out certain cases where that have been talked about in the past, such as A Cat Was Involved, where, you know, Chet's the day he flunked out of canine school with only the leaping test left and leaping test being his best thing. And all he remembers that a cat was involved and there might've been some blood. Well, I wrote that up as a E-only short story that turns into a little mystery all its own and explains Chet's conduct on that day. But even in those, I don't think it'll ever be from... We see Bernie from the outside, and not just from the outside, but from the very special point of view of this companion who thinks that Bernie is the greatest thing that ever walked the earth.
Well, the reason I asked you that is I was thinking that if you ever got to the point where you were going to wrap up the series... I was thinking in terms of Susie being a writer, maybe, you know, the thing that she decides one day is, hey, Bernie, you should really tell the stories of your career, and I could write it for you. And then Bernie would tell Susie the stories, and what we would find out – see, I was thinking this all out while we were, you know. But as Bernie is telling the stories, we would get all those details that Chet missed because he went after a Cheeto or a Slim Jim or a cat or whatever.
Yes. And, okay, and now we're into a metafiction project.
Yeah.
That sounds like hard work to me.
That sounds like hard work to you. See, that would be the easy part to me. I don't know. Interesting. All right. So the other thing I was thinking about is the characters, Bernie, obviously Susie, Chet, they seem like they must be fairly close to you. And I wondered in what way are they in terms of Bernie or even Chet for that matter, either of them take characteristics from Spencer or, you know, does Chet take
We've had a little breakup here, Bob.
I'm sorry. Let me.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Am I part of these people and dogs?
Yeah.
This is always a tough question. And my pro forma answer is no. That these are works of, I mean, let's say it, art, you know, where, however, having said that, I think I, there's the voice of Chet, there's a lot of me in the voice of Chet. There's no question going all the way back to the way I was when I was a kid. Is very much in there, and that's one of the reasons I enjoy writing it so much, I think, and why it's an effort, but it's a very, you know, it's hard work, but it's pleasant hard work, if that makes any sense at the same time.
It does. And it is still hard work, right? I mean they read as fun novels, but are they harder to do than another type of crime fiction?
I don't know whether it is or not, but, you know, the thing is, I'm one of those people who is really concerned with the quality of the prose. I'm very much into the rhythm of it and a whole lot of other – that's where I have rules. I have thousands of them. And so to do that so that the surface seems so smooth and lively – and entertaining and effortless there's a lot of effort in that, but I have a lot of experience too, and so that helps. That really helps.
Now that you mentioned that you have all these many rules, where do you write, when do you write, how often do you write, what can you tell us about the process?
I write right where I am right now, which is in my office, which is we have a detached garage, and over it is like the big room that's over the garage that everybody who has a detached garage has. And that's where I work. So I have like a 15-foot commute to my house. And I just got back from the main part of the book tour for Paw and Order. But I try to write every day, at least some. Doesn't have to be a whole lot, although I do have a quota that I've put so high that I hardly ever reach it just because I want to make myself unhappy. But at least you do something. So the next day when you sit down, you aren't where you were 2 days ago. You're moving. The whole thing is moving. And eventually it stacks up. So I try to write every day. And I'm going to have to in the next year because I'm starting a new project for Scholastic. They asked me to write if I'd be interested in doing a middle grade series, a mystery series for middle grade, you know, middle kids. Mm-hmm. But also narrated by a dog. So Woof, W-O-O-F, comes out next summer from Scholastic.
Oh, very exciting.
So thank you. So I love writing for kids. The Chet and Bertie books are not for kids, although I know a lot of teenagers are reading them. And at some of the signings, this time, for the first time, whole family showed up with smaller kids. And this dad came up to me and he said he reads them to the kids, just editing out the adult parts. And then one of the kids turned to me and he said, "Yeah, Dad, but when we're listening in the car, we get to hear it all because they're on audio." So I like that. And I like that kid.
Very nice. Very nice. And what do you write on? I'm aware that you have a Mac in front of you. Do you write on a Mac?
Yeah, I have right now I'm on my little laptop, so I have a larger monitor with a big keyboard, the old fashioned kind of big keyboard. And that's in Microsoft Word and DocX or whatever it is now. Every time they change one, I flounder for a while. And then, yeah, that's what I do. But I go back to the age of IBM Selectrix. And I'm also a lousy typist. I'm still after all these years, I've written over 30 novels. I'm a two-finger typist. But I can type just as fast as I can think. That's the guideline.
That's exactly how I work. Two-finger typist. I'm like, this finger flies over the keyboard and this one does the shifting and the option and that kind of stuff. And I can type pretty much as fast as anyone who will use all 10 fingers. That's nice.
Okay, there you go.
And, it's funny you mentioned the Selectrix. I was telling my daughter yesterday, we're getting her ready off for college, packing her stuff. And I'm looking at this mountain of stuff that we prepared. And I said, do you know what I took to college? What? I said, one piece of luggage with my clothes in it and another piece of luggage. And that was my IBM Selectrix typewriter.
Yeah.
And that was it.
She didn't know what you were even talking about.
She had a little idea because she's seen it. I still have it.
You still have it.
I still have
that
it.
That establishes how ancient you are to your daughter. Get rid of it. That would be my suggestion.
Actually, I'm thinking I may just add it to the set behind me.
Yes, I would like it. I like your set, by the way.
Do you?
It's pretty cool.
Let me show that.
Yeah. Is she going far away to college?
About a five-hour drive. I think that's about the right distance, frankly.
It's a good distance. I've got four kids. We've tried all the distances.
Yeah. I think it'll be good. All right, so back to this. Yes. What inspired you to write Paw and Order, particularly to set this one in D.C.?
Well, that's a good question. The first five books in the series, as you were saying in the intro, take place in what Chet knows of as the Valley. Mm-hmm. But we, the reader, have probably figured out that it's Arizona because it's a huge metropolis surrounded by vast deserts, someone like Phoenix, although it never says Phoenix. It just says the Valley. In book six, which is The Sound and the Furry, they take their first case out of state. What happens is the way that starts, they're out driving one day, Chet and Bernie, in the old Porsche. I think they've had three now in the series, each one more decrepit than the last. One went off a cliff, one was blown up, and now they're on the third. So they're out driving at the beginning of book six, and they come upon one of those prison work crews, the guys in orange jumpsuits by the side of the road. And every time Chet and Bernie see one of those, they slow down because they might know somebody. And in this, somebody they put away. And in this case, they do. It's Frenchie Boutet. And Frenchie is this black sheep Cajun from a family full of black sheep. But he has a brother, Ralph, who's the only white sheep who's gone missing. And Frenchie wants to hire them to go to Louisiana and find Ralph, his brother. Now, of course, as an aside, Chet sees no pockets in this orange jumpsuit. So where's the money going to come from to hire them? Chet's very conscious about their finances. But that night, this woman shows up at the door and hands them $3,000 in cash to go take the case. Chet, by the way, smells shrimp on that money. That's the first clue in the case. So they go to Louisiana, and early in the case, Bernie is questioning a witness. And the witness, hearing him speak, says, "Oh, you're not from around here, are you?" And Bernie says, "No, we're from Arizona." And the next line is Chet, of course, because it's all Chet. Bernie says, "No, we're from Arizona." And the next line is, "Ha, we were from Arizona. I'd wondered about that." So on page 93 of book six, Chet finds out they're from Arizona. At the end of that case, The Sound and the Furry, they're going to leave Arizona. And that's where Paw and Order, which can be read totally on its own, all the books can be read in their own, starts. So they're going to leave Louisiana. To turn left is to go back to Arizona at home. To turn right, though, would be go to see Bernie's girlfriend, Susie, now with the Washington Post. So that is why they go there initially. But why they go there in my mind, I mean, that's why they, the character, but I'm just so, you know, I'm just so interested in what's going on internationally now and just how exaggerated all our differences have become politically, that I wanted to see, and as I was telling one of my tennis buddies before I started the book, I said, you know, I want to try like a John le Carré thing, Graham Greene with international spies maybe, and the implications in presidential politics, but through the eyes of a dog, to which my tennis buddy said, are you nuts? So, but that's why that's what got me started. Incidentally, though, as a little aside, I want to thank Vladimir Putin. Only within the small following frame of his recent, what would you call them, actions have made the story of Paw and Order much more timely. So probably on your show there haven't been too many shout outs to Vlad.
And this would be the first.
Yes, and if he's watching or listening right now, it's enough, Vlad. You've done me a solid and cool it.
That's a first time for everything. Now, so when you take the book to Louisiana, when you take the book to D.C., is that an excuse to travel and you know, write it off, or do you do it all from Massachusetts?
The writing I do from here. However, those are two places I know, and I don't really have to go back. Now, it just so happens that I have a daughter in D.C. My daughter, Rosie Gray, is a political reporter for BuzzFeed. So it's, we love seeing her. So I did go down and, you know, and had a, it was, but it's a place I know. And as for Louisiana, I knew it not at all until my first son went to Tulane and then my second son went to Tulane and my wife and I just fell in love with it. And we go back a lot. So I'm familiar with it. And I can't really write about a place when I'm there. It becomes too reportorial and journalistic. But if I'm back home and I forcing the imagination to re-bring it to life, then it becomes alive on the page. I'm not saying that's for everybody. That works for me.
I'm always interested in that. I'm kicking myself. There's another author. You're with Atria. And it's also with Atria. Did the 13th Hour and my goodness, this Richard. I can't think of Richard's last name. I remember reading one of his books. It took place at the Four Seasons in Turkey, I want to say. And the detail was absolutely fantastic. And I had just finished working on a book with the founder of the Four Seasons. And so it struck me particularly. And I figured he had to have gone there. He said, oh, no, I just looked it up on the internet. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, but so I'm always interested.
Well, okay, for little things like that, the internet is just a joy where you can, you know, in the old days, you had to go to the library and root around. Now, if I need to know just some little fact, let's say I need, the name of a cool new microbrew, you know, in Lafayette, Louisiana. I mean, I can have that in a second. Mm-hmm.
So tell me about this. Now that this is the seventh book, and you said that there's the three e-books or short stories. Do you have any insight from the publisher at this point about the conversation that went on when they first got their hands on the first book and they realized that you're trying to sell them a book with the dog, Chet, as the narrator? Have they given you any insight into how that conversation went?
They have not, other than the fact that they paid decently for it.
Ah, okay.
Okay. And that's really the kind of insight, you know, that actually, you know, is true. It worked for them. And I think it seems to work for people. And this is the other thing that a lot of things that I didn't foresee came of this. But the very best of all has been the reaction of people. That it's, yes, it entertains them. And it has plenty of suspense in that from, you know, to keep them reading. But a lot of people are really moved by it. And believe it or not, have found like, help in this. People have been tell me, I hear it often, you know, they were going through a bad time and they read Chet and Bernie and it cheered them up. Well, you know, you can't ask for better than that.
No. And I was thinking too about the fan base, that It must be a little on the unique side, because it's kind of like people say you have to suspend disbelief for certain types of projects, and this would be one of them. I'm thinking that when it started, probably the response was a certain way, but now that it's an ongoing series, have you found that the readers and the fans for Chet particularly have evolved in their approach or the way they talk to you or the questions that they ask?
You know, I don't think there's a whole lot of suspension of disbelief that's happened with them from the get-go. And I'll tell you why. It's because there are – Bernie refers to the nation within, the nation, meaning the world of dogs. You know, it's funny. So that's his expression, the nation within, to refer to the world of dogs. Because there are 75 to 80 million dogs in this country. Now, I get asked – people say to me sometimes, you know, I looked on Wikipedia to see where you got that phrase – the nation within. Yeah, I made it up. Okay. So that's Bernie's phrase. But there are 75 to 80 million people in this country, I mean, dogs in this country. So there are tens and tens of millions of people who have close interaction with dogs and who know dogs and who've looked in the eyes of dogs. And those people do not have to suspend belief to read the Chet and Bernie mystery series. And they haven't from the beginning.
Got it. I feel in reading Paw and Order, I've had this experience with my own dog. I've got a little terrier, and this is my seventh dog, and he's unique. After so many dogs, you would think they'd kind of blend together, but he's turned out to be rather unique. And the latest example of that is that we'll go out back. This dog likes to eat hibiscus flowers. Okay, so as he's gotten older, he's 12 now. He used to just stand straight up, and he would paw at the branch to get the flower that he wanted. It's a little harder on him now. So now he'll stand there, he'll spot the one he wants, and he'll look at it, and he'll look at me, and he'll look at it, and he'll look at me until I get the message. And then I have to come over and point it down, and then he'll rip it off, chew it up into little pieces, eat it all up, and then turn back to me and point to it and point his nose at another one. Chet is a lot easier for me to accept now, several years later.
Yeah, of course he's doing that, and he wants you to pick up that cue quicker, Bob.
I'm sure he does.
He shouldn't have to do that look thing twice. Once you do it. So he's wondering why you're so slow to get the hibiscus thing.
All right, so tell me about your own puppy situation. When the books – I have the first two books, and I have the latest one, but it's on my Kindle. So I haven't gotten to the end of the part where there's a little note usually about the author.
They're on the flap.
Do you still have Audrey?
And there's a picture of the two dogs. On the flap of Paw and Order, on the inner flap, you know, the inner black flap, there's a picture of Audrey and Pearl. Audrey's now a 9-year-old, half Bernese, half Golden, who's a wonderful watchdog, and Pearl is a 3-year-old, pure Golden, of that very white variety, and she's getting by on looks alone.
Not the smartest?
She's reasonably smart, but she doesn't need to be. Okay, like a lot of beauties, it really is enough. If you got blessed by, you know, incredible good looks, a lot of people have sailed through life on just that alone.
And how much did Audrey inspire what we know as Chet, or at all?
None at all, but and we've always had dogs, sometimes three at a time. No one dog or even a conglomerate of them are Chet, but I could never have written the character having not had all these dogs and observing them for so long. But I didn't do a whole lot of formal research. It's osmosis. I watched them. I was with them, lived with them, and that's how I learned. I mean, here's an example. Going back, you mentioned Atria, the publisher, in the early days. I got a call from my editor once, and he said, there was this meeting, and someone said, hey, have you noticed that all the visual descriptions in the Chet and Bernie mystery series are kind of from like a waist-high level instead of a head-high level? Did he do that deliberately, meaning me? So my editor called one day and he said, hey, that's this, and asked me this question. Okay, that was the first I'd heard of it. Hadn't thought of it. It's just, you know, people, which I didn't do, but they go get MFA degrees and they take writing courses. And I've talked to lots of people who've done that, and they learn all about structure and plotting and twists and all these narrative techniques. The word imagination doesn't seem to come up very much, and that's the chainsaw in the toolkit. You know, and I was very lucky. My mother was a writer too. She died a long, long time ago before I became a writer. But she taught me how to use the imagination, how to really push it, how to make it work for you.
Do you ever see an end in sight for the series? I mean, or do you perceive it as an evergreen in which Bernie and Chet and Susie they never appreciably age or change, or do you think at some point you will want to wrap up their story and move on?
Well, I'm already moving on without wrapping up their story because I'm doing this other series now for Scholastic. So it's really a best of both worlds. All I can say is this, I will never force it. If it doesn't feel fresh to me, I will never try to inject it with freshness. Once it reaches, but it's going actually the other way. I'm more and more, when I start writing in that voice, I'm just, and now I'm going to make a shameful admission. Based on just a question that was asked. Actually, it's come up many times in the Q&A at the end of the tour. Oh, and for anyone who ever comes to one of these talks, there's also a pop quiz with prizes. So, and some of the people are just brilliant at it. They know the series better than I do. But people say, what was the question? It had to do with, sorry, Bob, I just forgot on my little digression. It's like chat.
Will you ever want to wrap it up, or will they age?
Yeah. Okay, yes, I have no, only if it didn't feel fresh to me. But one thing that'll never happen is like Chet dying to wrap it up. I feel like that's a very cheap way to get into the reader's emotions. I don't mind getting into the reader's emotions, but I want to pay for it. I don't want to do it cheaply.
Okay. And what's next? Do you have a next book in this series scheduled yet? Or?
I'm just thinking it out now, but they're back in Arizona. And the initial theft has to do with the saguaro cactus thieves in the desert who steal these wild ones and sell them to landscapers. And that's just my, you need a little point of entry into the story. But what it is really about is the dangers of the desert nowadays, not the ancient desert. Dangers of it, but the dangers now that because of what's happening with humanity in the desert. That's really the beginning of the new one. And then after that, I'll be writing the book that comes after Woof, which I want to call Woof Woof, but I haven't. I mean, that one will be easy to go on, and people will know where it is in the series just by counting the woofs. If there are four, it's book four. But I haven't discussed. This is the first time I've actually mentioned that. So the Scholastic people, if they see this, will probably be upset. So don't let them, Bob. Don't let them in.
I like the title for book two. I'm thinking book three.
Maybe
it might be a little much.
Exactly, and that's why it's great to have editorial advice. Because sometimes you can get so enthusiastic about your own little brainstorms. So it's great to have someone, you know, who puts things in perspective. Nobody in this can be all alone, and you shouldn't want to be.
Very good. Well, folks, listen, you can find the latest Chet and Bernie mystery, Paw and Order, as well as the other books in the series, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order right now at a great price at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. If you're watching on the site, the main site, MRMedia.com, you know that somewhere below the video, either to the left or right, underneath Spencer, you'll see the copy of the book. You can click on it right now. You can get it in print. I think they can get it to you via drone in about 30 minutes or less, or they can ship it to you in 1 or 2 days.
Don't give away that drone scene. Yeah. We'll just call it The Strange Bird, which is what Chet thinks of it.
All right. And then you can also get it by ebook and audiobook as well?
Yes, audiobook as well.
All right. So pretty much any way you like your book, you can get this. You can get one of these books.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. All right.
And what about a website for the series?
Yeah, chetthedog.com. And there's also Chet's on Facebook, Chet the Dog, and also Twitter at Chet the Dog.
It's an amazing output of material, this dog. Spencer Quinn, a pleasure to talk to you again. A pleasure to see you. Appreciate you indulging me a second time. And thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media.
Pleasure was mine. Thank you very much.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk, and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot.
Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Resistance is futile. It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights.
The preceding presentation was brought to you by the Realm Network.